Mal glared. I mean it. Let go, or you'll be sorry. Carlo shook his head, trembling all over. Fine, you win. Keep the box, Carlos. But you have to come with us if you do, Mal ordered.
Come again? Go with you? Where?
No way. He wasn't going anywhere, especially anywhere dangerous. Mal told him about the forbidden fortress hidden on the island, and where it might be, and how they had to find it.
Nope. I'm not going to nowhere. I'm staying right here, Carlo said, crossing his arms.
You'll do what I say, you little, threatened Mal. Carlos opened his mouth to argue, but thought better of it. In the end, it was Maleficent who wanted to reclaim her scepter, not just Mal. And if word ever got back to the Mistress of Darkness that he had opposed or hindered the search in any way, he might as well start calling himself Slop, because that's what he would be.
Okay, fine. I'll go. But only if Evie goes too, he said.
Evie? Asked Mal. You're coming, aren't you, lovely?
Evie sighed. Fine, she said. Fine. I guess I'll come. Beats looking in mirror all day for flaws.
So, we're good then? Asked Jay. Four of us looking for the dragon's eye?
I guess so, and I guess I want to know what this thing really did, said Carlos. If it really did burn a hole in the dome and let magic into the island. As if in answer, the machine beeped.
Beep.
Mal nodded.
All right then, let's go.
We've got a library to break into and a map to find.
Not just yet. Carlo said, raising a hand.
We can't go anywhere until my chores are done. And it's laundry day.
Chapter 18. Once Upon a Dream. Her mother was a famous beauty in a land of famous beauties. And so it was only to be expected that Princess Audrey, daughter of Aurora, was gifted with the same lilting voice, lovely thick hair, swan-like neck, and deep, dark eyes that could drown a prince in their warm embrace. Like a kitten scenting catnip, or perhaps like an isle of banished former villain sensing magic, a young prince could hardly be expected to resist such sparkly, dimpled charms. In point of fact, Princess Audrey, like her mother before her, was exactly the sort of princess who gave princesses their rather princessy reputation, right down to her very last perfect curl and the last crystal stitched into her silken gown. And so it was to Princess Audrey that Prince Ben went the next day to lick his wounds and seek some comfort after the disastrous meeting of the King's Council, like the discouraged, catnip-seeking kitten he was.
It's such a mess, he told her as they walked around the garden of the cottage, as Aurora and Philip's grand castle was nicknamed, after King Hubert had declared that the 40-room palace was a mere starter home for the royal newlyweds.
Starter home? Aurora had said. What are you possibly imagining that will start? A shelter for homeless giants?
The king had not been pleased to hear it, but Aurora was a simple girl and had lived as Briar Rose for 18 years of her life in an actual cottage in the woods. So she found the castle more than spacious enough for her family, and at least one or two stray passing giants.
So what happens now? Audrey asked, looking perfectly charming with a flower in her hair. Naturally,
It happened to match the silken lining of her dusty rose bodice. Surely, even a prince can't be expected to do everything right the first time he tries.
Easy for you to say, Ben thought.
A dove alighted on Audrey's shoulder, cooing sweetly. Audrey lifted one pale pink nail, and the dove nuzzled her gentle fingertip. Ben found himself looking around for the royal portraitist. Ben sighed. Somehow, even the sight of his beautiful girlfriend wasn't enough to lift the prince's somber mood.
Dad says I have to hold another meeting to fix it. He's disappointed, of course. And he's had to send conciliatory gift baskets of his favorite cream cakes to everyone who was there, so he's not in the best mood. You know how much he likes his cream cakes.
Frosted or unfrosted? Audrey asked. And with currants or chocolates?
All kinds, Ben said, sighing again. More than a dozen each. Mom thinks it's the only way to make peace, although Dad was kind of annoyed to give away so many of his favorite treats.
They are rather good, Audrey smiled, and everyone does love cake. Ben wished Audrey could be more understanding, but her life had been charmed from the beginning, as the pampered princess of two doting parents, especially Queen Aurora, who had been separated from her own mother and forced to spend her formative years in a fairy foster home under the threat of a deadly curse. My daughter will never know anything but love and beauty and peace and joy, Aurora declared, and she meant it. So it wasn't hard to see now why Audrey couldn't understand how Ben could ever disappoint his parents. She never had. And she never will, he thought. Like almost everything in Auradon, Audrey was perfectly sweet, perfectly gentle, and if Ben were honest, sometimes perfectly boring. There were other colors, aside from pink and pale turquoise. There were other animals who liked to do things other than coo and cuddle. There were perhaps also other topics than gowns and gardens and balls and carriages, no matter how good the custom paint job on the latest chariots was. Weren't there?
I don't even know what those sidekicks are so upset about, Audrey said.
They're so adorable and everyone loves them. Why would they bother with things like wages and hours and... She paused to shudder. Credit. She stroked the dove. Those aren't lovely things at all. He looked at her.
I don't know exactly. I'd never thought about it before, but I can't stop thinking about it now. I never imagined that anyone in Auradon didn't live exactly like we do. In our castles, with our servants, and our silk sheets and breakfast trays and rose gardens.
I love rose gardens, said Audrey with a smile. And I love the ones with topiaries shaped like adorable creatures. She giggled in delight at the thought, and the dove on her shoulder chirped back agreeably.
They said I was rude, he lamented. And I was.
The elephants are my favorite, with those cute little trunks.
But I didn't have a choice. They weren't listening to me. They also said I lost my temper.
He hung his head, ashamed of the scene he had caused. But also the hippos. Such lovely teeth. It's such a talent, really, to prune a bush into the shape of a hippo. Don't you think?
Yes, but about the meeting.
Audrey laughed again. And it was a tinkle of fairy bells chiming in the wind. Ben realized then that she hadn't heard a word he was saying.
Maybe it's better this way. She doesn't understand what I'm going through, and I don't think she ever will. Audrey must have seen the frown on his face, because she paused to take Ben's hand in her tiny, perfectly manicured fingers. Don't worry about it, Ben. Everything will work out. It always does. You're a prince, and I'm a princess. This is the land of happy endings. Remember? You deserve nothing less than everything your heart desires. You were born to it, Ben. We all were. Ben stopped in his tracks. He had never thought about it like that. It was implied, certainly, in everything they did and everything that was done for them. But to hear the words themselves, from such beautifully shaped, perfectly pink lips. Why us? How did we luck into this life? How is that fair? To be born into a life without a choice in the matter, without the freedom to be anyone else. She laughed. Don't stop now, silly. I have something to show you. Something perfectly perfect, just like today. He allowed himself to be pulled, like any good prince in the hands of a maiden princess, but his mind was still far away. Is this all there is? Is this even what I want for my life? They had circled the garden, and now Audrey led him into a secluded patch of wildflowers. A beautiful picnic was laid out on the grass amid the blossoms, in a woodland vale filled with all manner of happy forest animals, nuzzling, chirping, and hopping all about. Isn't it amazing? I had half the groundsmen and three cooks working on it all morning. She leaned in to nuzzle Ben's cheek. Just for us. She pulled him down to the embroidered silken blanket. Her initials intertwined with those of her royal parents were stitched into the fabric beneath them. The gold silken thread sparkled like sunshine in the grass. Ben smoothed a loose curl away from the blush of her rosy cheek. It's lovely, and I thank you for it, but I know. She sighed. I didn't bring any cream cakes. It was all I could think about when you mentioned them. I do apologize. But we can sample a good 17 sorts of other pastries. She held up one shaped like a swan with chocolate wings. This one is sweet, don't you think? She all but cooed at the pastry. Ben pulled away. He shook his head. But don't you ever wonder if there's more to life than this? What could be more than this? Asked Audrey with an uncharacteristic frown. She put down the swan. What else is there? I don't know, but wouldn't you like to find out? Explore a little? Get out on our own and see the world? At least see our own kingdom? She sucked chocolate off her finger, and even that was distractingly cute. Ben wondered if she knew it. He suspected that she did. Then she sighed. You're not talking about that awful island, are you? He shrugged. Maybe. Don't you ever think about it? How weird it would be to live trapped in one place. Under a dome? It was, in fact, the first time Ben could ever remember seeing his princess's princessy feathers ruffled. She wasn't even pouting now. She was practically, almost nearly slightly irritated. Perhaps, darling, they should have considered that before undertaking a life of evil and villainy, and an eternity of punishment. Now Ben was intrigued. He had never seen her like this, and wondered for a moment if he didn't prefer it. At the very least, they were finally having a real conversation.
You have to admit, an eternity is a rather long time.
He shook his head.
They're captives, Audrey. At least here in Auradon, we can travel anywhere and everywhere we please. They can't.
Audrey smiled brightly.
Yes, which reminds me, I told Aziz and Lonnie we would be visiting them today. Carriage picks us up in an hour.
She leaned forward, touching his chin with her fingertip.
Time for a new topic. Almost a whole new world, you could say. But Ben had a stubborn streak in him that wouldn't give up.
Don't try to change the subject, Audrey. Come on. Don't you wonder about them at all?
The villains?
Yeah.
Audrey sat back, shaking her head.
No. Good riddance. Mother says one of them tried to put her to sleep for 100 years. After she'd already spent her entire childhood in foster care and protective custody. My own mother. And then that same horrible woman turned into a dragon who tried to kill Papa.
She shivered. Audrey must have heard the story more times than she cared to say. Ben understood. But she'd never mentioned any of it to him before today. He didn't blame Audrey for not wanting to talk about it, and he softened his voice now, taking her hand.
Her name is Maleficent, said Ben, who had studied his fairy tale history. His mother had read the old tales to him before he could even read himself. She was the mistress of darkness, the most evil fairy who has ever lived.
Audrey's frown deepened. Don't say her name here, she whispered.
It was practically a hiss. She was so upset.
She might hear you and curse you. She takes away everyone and everything my family loves.
Now it was Ben's turn to smile.
No way. That dome will hold them forever.
He leaned forward.
And who exactly does your family love?
Audrey smiled in return. One blink, and the storm in her eyes was gone.
My family loves all who are good and kind and deserving of such love, Your Highness.
She held up her delicate hand, and he kissed it obligingly.
I shouldn't give her such a hard time,
Ben thought. Not after everything her family has been through.
Dance with me, sweet prince, she urged.
Ben stood up and bowed.
Happy to please my lady.
Dancing in the forest was her favorite thing to do. He knew. Ben held her in his arms.
She was beautiful, perfect. A princess who was in love with him, and he was in love with her.
Wasn't he?
Audrey sang softly. I know you. I walked with you once upon a dream.
It was their song. But this time, it caught him off guard. With a start, Ben realized he didn't know her. Not really. He didn't know her soul, her dreams, and she didn't know his. They didn't really know each other. And worse, he had never dreamt about her. Not once. For Audrey, that song might be about him. But for Ben, that song wasn't about her. No, not Audrey. He had dreamt about another girl. One with purple hair and green eyes glittering in the dark. A sly smile of mischief on her lips. Who was she? Where was she? Would he ever meet her? And would he ever get her out of his head? Ben closed his eyes and tried to focus on the melody right in front of him. But the memory of the girl from his dream was too hard to forget. Chapter 19. 101 Ways to Find a Map. For the next several hours, Mal, Jay, and Evie helped Carlos with the painstaking task of finishing his mother's laundry. Or to be more specific, Jay and Evie helped Carlos, well, Mal, supervised. For a woman who lived on a semi-deserted island full of ex-villains, Cruella sure had an elaborate wardrobe, Mal thought. There were fringed scarves and silky black gloves, fishnet stockings and slinky black dresses, chubby wraps and whisper-knit cardigans, bulky coats and frilly corsets. Cruella DeVille might be exiled, but that didn't mean her clothes were going to be anything less than stunning. Mal looked around at Evie, who was humming as she folded black and white towels. The blue-haired princess had been relatively easy to sway, which boded well for when they actually found the scepter. Mal would make sure Evie would be the first one to touch it, absorbing the curse and falling asleep for 1,000 years. It was the evil scheme to end all evil schemes. And Mal was looking forward to sweet revenge, as well as picking up straight E's for the semester. Meanwhile, Jay was up to his elbows in suds, washing a number of black and white sweatshirts. Isn't this a lot of work? She asked, feeling exhausted just from watching everyone. Carlos nodded, his mouth full of safety pins. And you do it all? She asked Carlos. Her mother might ignore her and resent her and scold her, but at least she wasn't Maleficent's virtual slave. Carlos nodded again. He pulled the safety pins out of his mouth and explained that he was pinning a bustier on a hanger, just the way Cruella's old favorite dry cleaner in London had. Yes, but you got used to it, I guess. Don't worry, we're almost done. Thank goblins, said Mal, putting her feet up on a nearby ottoman. But just as they were putting the finishing touches on the last batch of black and white clothing and linens, they heard the roar of a car engine. It screeched to a stop in front of Hell Hall. Carlos began to shake. It's her. Mother, she's back. She wasn't supposed to be back till tomorrow. Oh, this bio must have dried up. Mal wasn't sure why Carlos was so jumpy. No one was as scary as her mother, after all. What on earth could he be so freaked out about? A car door slammed, and a heavy accent, raspy from too much smoke and yelling, rang through the air. Carlos! Carlos, my baby! Cruella cried, her throaty voice ringing through the house. Mal looked at Carlos. My baby? That didn't sound too bad now, did it? My baby needs a bath! She knows you're dirty from out here? Evie asked, confused. Carlos turned red again. She doesn't mean me, he whispered hoarsely. She means her car. She's telling me to give it a wash. Evie turned away from the window with a horrified look on her face. But it's so filthy. It'll take hours. The red car was splattered with dirt from driving around town, crusted black and disgusting. No way are we cleaning that, muttered Jay, who couldn't be looking forward to washing one more thing. The four of them crept out of the laundry area and into the main room. Cruella stopped short at the sight of three strange, scraggly teenagers in her house. She still wore her hair in a frizzy black and white do. Her long fur coat trailed on the floor behind her, and she was sucking on a slender black cigarette holder. Mal gave her a disapproving glance, and Corella shrugged. It's vapor, just vapor, darling. Mal waved the vapor away. Now, enough about my baby. How is my one true love? Corella drawled, puffing on her long vapor wand. The three teenagers turned to Carlos questioningly, but even he looked astounded to hear himself described in such affectionate terms. Your one true love? He almost stammered. Why, yes, my one true love, my furs. Corella laughed. You've been taking good care of them, haven't you, darling?
Of course,
Carlos said, reddening again. Mal knew he was kicking himself. But what did it matter if his mother loved him or not? They'd been taught that love was for the weak, for the silly, for the good. Love was not for the likes of them. They were villains, the bad guys. The only thing they loved was a wicked plan. Who are these clowns? Corella demanded, waving her arms toward the group. They're my... Carlos stammered. Mal knew he couldn't say friends, because they weren't friends. Not really. She had bullied him into going with her on a quest. Evie pitied him, and Jay was there only so he could attempt to steal the chandelier. Either Corella didn't notice or didn't care. Where are Jason and Harry? She asked. Carlos shrugged. Hi, Mrs. DeVille, I'm... Evie said, offering her hand.
I know who you are,
Corella said dismissively. Mal thought it was interesting that everyone knew who Evie was, even though she'd been kept in a castle for a decade.
Hey, said Mal.
Oh, hello, Mal. Tell your mother I send my love, darling, Corella said, gesturing with her vapor cigarette and then turning to glare at Jay. And you, tell your father he ripped me off with that lamp he sold me. The thing doesn't work.
Yes, ma'am,
Jay saluted. Well, what are you all standing here for? Didn't you hear me? My baby's dirty, darlings. It's absolutely wretched. I can't live another minute until you give my baby a bath. Now, scram! Evie thought they would be stuck at Cruella's forever. But at long last, the car was clean, and the foursome arrived at Dragon Hall in search of a map that would hopefully show them where the Forbidden Fortress was hidden on the island. Carlos's compass would help, but if Jafar was right about the island being much bigger than they thought, they would need to be pointed in the right direction first. Evie still wasn't sure why she had agreed to go with the group. She knew Mal was being false, but part of her was interested in the adventure. After being cooped up in a castle for 10 years, she was curious to see the rest of the island. The school was dead as a ghost town that Saturday afternoon. Only a goblin crew had arrived to clean the halls and mow the grass around the tombstones. The four villain kids walked in and descended into the gloom of campus. The hallways were lined with overgrown ivy that seemed to be multiplying by the second, snaking around old portraits of evil villains nobody could name anymore. Evie could have sworn their eyes followed her as she trotted past. They found Dr. Facilier at his desk, staring into an empty crystal ball.
Ah, if it isn't my least favorite student, he said when he saw Mal. Relax, Dr. F. I'm not here to fill your top hat with crickets again.
What a relief, he said coldly. How can I help you?
We need to get into the Forbidden Library, Mal said. The Athenaeum of Secrets.
Ah.
But there's a reason it's called the Forbidden Library, because students are expressly forbidden to enter, he said sternly. Evie thought Mal would give up, but instead Mal hopped onto Dr. Facilier's desk, cool as Lucifer.
Yeah, about that, she said, plopping down a pack of tarot cards.
Entrance fee?
Dr. F picked up a few and held them under the dim reading light beside him. The Major Arcana.
Impressive.
He pocketed the tarot set and studied the four students in front of him.
What exactly are you looking for in the library?
A map of the island, said Mal. And make it quick, will you? I haven't got all day. The giant spider guarding the door moved away as docile as a cat when Dr. Facilier tickled its belly. The door to the Library of Forbidden Secrets opened with a rusty squeak, and Dr. F escorted the four of them through. Tall, teetering bookshelves housed tattered, waterlogged, leather-bound books, covered with 20 years' worth of dust, as well as beakers and vials filled with strange-looking liquids and potions. As Dr. Facilier scurried down the dingy corridors before them, moving through the rows of bookshelves and muttering under his breath, they were only able to make out the faint outline of his glowing candle, casting shadows against the library walls. You know, he's got bat poop for brains, right? This could all be for nothing, Jay whispered. Mal shot him a look.
Just saying, said Jay.
It's worth a try, Evie said from behind them, stopping briefly to untangle herself from a cobweb. Otherwise, we'll just be wandering around in the dark, like we are now.
Yeah, it couldn't hurt,
agreed Carlos. He was holding his machine protectively under his jacket.
Aha! Here we are,
Dr. Facilier announced, stopping in front of a row of cases. He pulled out a yellowing rolled-up piece of parchment from one of the dusty shelves. He smoothed out the paper and placed it on a lopsided work table while the four of them gathered around. There's nothing there, Evie pointed out, her voice small. It was true. The map was blank.
Well, it was written in invisible ink, of course, Dr. Facilier said, as if everybody knew this. How's a secret supposed to stay a secret otherwise?
Without warning, and to the shock of everyone around, Mal grabbed him by the collar and pushed him up against one of the bookcases, which caused several of the vials to fall and shatter to the floor. Why, you little rat. Have you forgotten who my mother is? And how she can have you and everyone on this filthy island? Mal! Evie said in a shocked tone. Stop it! She put a hand on Dr. Facilier's trembling arm. Let me handle this. Mal turned to her. Let you what? Handle this. Easier to catch flies with honey than vinegar, she said. Go on. Let go. Gently. Gently. Mal slowly let go of Dr. Facilier, whose knees would have given out if Evie hadn't caught him. Now, Dr. F, there has to be a way to make the ink visible. Doesn't there? Dr. Facilier mopped his sweaty brow with a raggedy silk handkerchief.
Yes, there is.
Good, said Evie. Now, tell us how. The headmaster pointed shakily to the vials that had shattered on the ground.
The antidote was kept there. But now it's gone.
Evie glanced at Mal, who looked stricken. Mal put her head in her hands and groaned. Mal? Carlos asked softly, tapping her shoulder. "Go away, Spotty," she snapped.
"Listen, I know how to make the elixir. See the ink."
They all turned to him, including Dr. Facilier.
"You can do magic?"
Mal asked.
"But how?"
No, it's not magic, it's just a little chemistry. You know, weird science," Carlos said.
"Come on, Evie, bring the map."
They left Dr. Facilier back in his office, giving himself a tarot reading, and followed Carlos to the chem lab, where they watched him pull various bottles, beakers, and powders off the shelves.
"You're sure this isn't magic?"
asked Jay skeptically.
"I'm sure. It's science, like what humans have to do."
Carlos mixed a few drops of liquid here, a dash of powder here, but then he frowned.
"Wait a minute. I can't find the binder."
"The what?"
"Reza.
He must have stolen it from the lab last week. He hates me. Ugh!" Carlos' face crumpled.
"I'm sorry, Mal. I don't think I can do it after all. Not without the thing that puts it all together and sparks the chemical reaction."
"Reza stole a vial from the lab?"
Jay asked.
"He must have," said Carlos. "It's not here."
"This vial, perhaps?"
Jay grinned, holding up a small stopper test tube filled with sparkly liquid that he had shown Mal earlier.
"Where'd you get that?"
"From Reza's backpack. Takes one to know one," said Jay. Carlos poured a few droplets into his beaker and mixed it all together. A puff of smoke blew out.
"Voila,"
he said. "Antidote to invisible ink." He poured the mixture over the map. And just like magic, the Isle of the Lost began to form before their eyes, including the hidden and forbidden zones. The Forbidden Fortress appeared, a menacing-looking castle of spiky walls and twisty towers located on the edge of the island, right in the middle of nowhere. Chapter 20. Goblin Wharf. Mal thought Jay's having the secret vial on hand was a pretty decent stroke of luck, which made her think that maybe they were onto something here. Maybe it was her destiny to find Maleficent's dragon's eye.
"Do you have the compass?"
she asked Carlos. Carlos nodded. The box beeped as if to agree. According to the map, they would have to walk past the village right to the edge of the shore, and from there the path would take them to the fortress. They set off, Carlos in front with Jay, Evie just behind, and Mal holding up the rear. She watched them walk in front of her. She knew Jay would steal the dragon's eye for himself at the first opportunity, that Evie was trying to get on her good side and curry favor, and that Carlos had only joined them to fulfill his curiosity. But it didn't matter. Somehow, they all had a common goal: to find the dragon's eye. Better yet, she wasn't going into nowhere alone. Mal had her gang of thieves, her very own minions. And that was progress indeed. Her evil scheme, the big nasty one, was working. The path away from the village and toward the shore was smooth at first, but soon became rocky. Mal began to flag, her feet hurt in her boots, but she soldiered on grimly, now leading the way and following the directions on the map. Behind her, she could hear Evie's light steps, Jay's stomping ones, and Carlos's tentative ones. "Hi-ho, hi-ho, it's off to work we go," Carlos sang under his breath. Evie shuddered. Don't. What do you have against war?
Oh, right,
he said. Sorry. It's okay. So, that was your mom, huh? Said Evie.
Yup, the one and only Cruella de Vil, Carlos said,
bypassing some poison ivy and pointing it out to the rest of the group to avoid.
One-way ticket to Crazy Town, right?
She's not so bad, said Evie, who ducked below a low-hanging branch of a creepy oak tree. At least she doesn't do this thing that my mom does, where she pretends to be a magic mirror, telling me I'm far from the fairest of the land. Carlos stopped in his tracks, and he and Jay looked at her, shocked. Even Mal turned around to stare at her.
Really? But you're gorgeous, Jay said. I mean, you're not my type, sweetheart, but you've got to know you're good-looking.
Do you really think so? She asked.
Nah, your mom's right. You're ugly, Jay teased.
That sucks that she does that, said Carlos quietly. Whatever, Evie said nonchalantly. It's not like I care. You really mean that? Asked Carlos. I mean, it's not like your mom is any different, right? Evie pointed out. They were the children of the most evil villains in the world. What did they expect? Love? Joy? Sympathy? I guess not. And your dad, Jay? Doesn't he only care about the shop? Jay brooded on that.
Yeah, of course. But what else is he supposed to care about?
He asked honestly. Mal listened to their conversation, finding it oddly soothing to have other people around, for once. She'd never really liked companionship before. But then again, Maleficent had always insisted that they lived apart from the pack, superior, alone and bent on revenge. Lonely, Mal thought. I was lonely. And so were they. Evie with her beauty-obsessed mother, Carlos with his screeching harpy of a parent, Jay, the happy-go-lucky thief with a quick wit and a dashing smile who could steal anything in the world except his father's heart. The gray fog surrounding the edge of the shore loomed closer. Soon they would have to walk through the mist and enter nowhere. When they did, would they also become nobody? Mal wondered. She cracked her knuckles. Her knees began to ache. They trudged on in silence for a while, when a sharp whistle cut through the air. It was from Jay, who had been scouting ahead. Evie took a step and crunched twigs loudly underfoot, while Carlos looked up fearfully. Mal whistled back. Jay jogged toward the three of them were huddled together.
What is it? Mal hissed. I saw something in the shadow. Hide!
He whispered fiercely, disappearing behind a rock. Carlos yelped and tried to climb a tree, the bark scratching his knees. Evie screamed softly and dove behind some blackberry bushes. But Mal froze in place. She couldn't move for some reason. At first, it was because she felt annoyed to think that any daughter of Maleficent would have to hide from anything. But as the shadow loomed larger and approached, she worried she had made the wrong decision. The shadow had a pair of large horns and a spiky tail. Was it a dragon? But her mother was the only dragon in these parts, and had lost the ability to transform into one once the magic shielding dome had been put in place. Then there was a moan, a terrible wailing, unlike anything they had ever heard. It was a hellhound, for sure, a creature of myth and legend, a creature of tooth and fang, blood and fur. Then the creature emitted what could only be called an adorable purr.
Beelzebub! Carlos cried from the tree. The monster emerged from the shadows, and a little black cat with a wicked grin appeared on the path. The shadow had distorted its ears to look like horns and its tail to appear as if it had spikes, but it was just a little kitty.
"You know this foul beast?" asked Mal contemptuously, to hide her embarrassment at having been scared. Her heart was still beating loudly in her chest.
"It's just my cat," Carlos said. "I got her when I was little," he added sheepishly. "She's one of Lucifer's litter. She's my evil sidekick."
"Oh, cool. I got one too. You know, at my birthday party," said Evie. "Mine is Othello, a baby parrot. Well, not such a baby anymore. Othello's got quite the mouth on him too. Not sure where he learned all those words."
"Cool. You got one of Iago's babies. I got two electric eels, Lagan and Derelict. You know, from Flotsam and Jetsam. They're huge now. Monsters," said Jay. "They hardly fit in their aquarium anymore."
Carlos let the cat rub his cheek. "Go on, Bee. Go back home. Stop following us. I'll be back soon. Don't worry."
"What's your evil sidekick?"
Evie asked, turning to Mal. Mal colored. She remembered exactly when they had each received their sidekicks. At that fabulous party long ago, to which she had not been invited.
"I don't have one," she said shortly.
"Oh," said Evie and turned away, looking embarrassed. "Don't worry," thought Mal. "You'll pay soon enough." Finally, they stood face to face with the gray fog that circled the island and marked the edge of nowhere. The mist was so thick, it was impossible to see what lay beyond it. It would have entailed a walk of faith to see what was on the other side. And all their lives, the four had been told to keep away from the fog, to stay back from the edge of the gray.
"Who goes first?" asked Jay.
"Not me," said Evie.
"Nor me,"
said Carlos.
"Duh," sniffed Mal. "As if either of you would."
"Mal?" asked Jay. "After you?"
Mal bit her lip. It was, after all, her quest.
"Yeah.
I'll go. Cowards." She squared her shoulders and tensed. She stepped into the fog. It was like walking through a cold rain, and she shivered. She reminded herself that there was no magic on the island and that nothing could hurt her. But even so, the gray darkness was impenetrable, and for a moment, she felt like screaming. Then, she was on the other side, still whole, not disintegrated, not nothing. She exhaled.
"It's fine," she called. "Get over here."
"If she says so," muttered Jay. Evie followed, then Carlos. Finally, the four of them were on the other side of the fog, standing at the edge of nowhere.
"Whoa,"
said Carlos. They all looked down. They were standing literally at the water's edge. One more step and they would have fallen off the rocky piece of land that was the Isle of the Lost and into the deep sea below to become an alligator's dinner.
"Holy Lucifer. What the heck are we supposed to do now?"
Mal asked.
"I don't know, but this thing won't shut up,"
Carlos said. It was true. The compass in his box was beeping wildly now. And the closer Carlos stepped toward the strip of rocky, foggy beach, the faster it beeped.
"It's over there. It has to be," he said, pointing to the sea.
"Well, I forgot my swimsuit, and I don't really enjoy being eaten by reptiles, so
It's all on you guys, said Jay, backing away from the water.
It can't be in the water, Mal said, yanking out the map from her pocket.
She gasped.
Guys, come here.
They all gathered around Mal.
Look! There's more!
More ink had appeared, and this time, they saw that the fortress wasn't technically on the Isle of the Lost at all, but was located on its own island, or rather its own piece of floating rock, which just so happened to be named the Isle of the Doomed.
Well, that's cheery, Carlos said.
And just how are we supposed to get over there? Evie asked.
Mal studied the map and pointed to a spot labeled Goblin Wharf.
We'll hitch a ride from one of our friendly neighborhood goblins to row us over.
Of course, Mal said, pushing past them and starting up the muddy beach toward the docks where the goblins unloaded the Auradon barges.
There's no such thing as a friendly goblin, Carlos sighed.
But like the rest of them, he followed behind Mal.
They arrived quickly at the busy port, mostly because the alligators had taken to snapping at them from the shallow water by the beach, and they'd sprinted screaming toward the dock. The wharf was bustling with activity. Goblins pushed their way past the foursome, emptying cargo from the big Auradon ships that were allowed in and out of the magic dome. They placed the rotting and rotten goods onto the splintering wooden boardwalk and jumped on and off each other's makeshift rafts and boats. They hooted and hollered in their goblin tongue, tossing bags of scraps and leftovers, clothing, food, cosmetics, electronics, everything the people in Auradon didn't want anymore or had no use for, onto teetering rickshaws to sell at the market.
We'll need to pay for passage, Mal said.
They're not going to take us over there for free.
The four of them emptied their pockets to pool enough of a sum of trinkets and food to pay their way across to the Isle of the Doomed. It took some haggling. Jay did most of the talking, as he spoke a bit of goblin from having worked at the shop. But they finally secured a spot on a scrap boat. That is, a boat that collected anything and everything that fell off the Auradon dumpsters. It was a scavenger of scavengers, the lowest of the bottom feeders. As it turned out, a goblin's boat was not constructed to hold four teenage villains. The floating wooden box creaked and groaned as Mal and the others boarded.
If I die, Jay said darkly, you still can't have any of my stuff.
We'll be fine, Evie said, but she seemed to say it more for her own benefit than anyone else's. The goblin snickered and started the ancient rusty motor, and off they went into the thick fog. It was odd to see the Isle of the Lost from the water. It almost looked pretty, Mal thought. The forest was lush and green around the edges of the island, and the rocky beach jutted out dramatically into a rolling blanket of navy blue water. In the distance, she could see Bargain Castle. From far away, it seemed to be gleaming in the fading sunlight.
Funny how different things look from far away, huh?
Evie said, following Mal's gaze back toward Isle of the Lost.
Yeah, sure, whatever,
Mal said, turning her back on Evie. That same ache was settling in her gut again, and she didn't like it. She didn't like it one bit. Mal could only be sure they'd arrived at the Isle of the Doomed because the engine had stopped. They still couldn't see 5 feet in front of them. Mal scrambled blindly out of the boat and onto the rocky beach, followed quickly by the rest of the team. The goblin quickly sped off. The fog lifted slightly as they made their way through the brush. Soon, they were standing in front of a gate covered with a painful-looking bristly forest of thorns. And beyond the gate, high on a craggy mountaintop, stood a large black castle, a ruined, forbidding wreck silhouetted against the night sky. The thorns around the gate grew thick and twisted so sharp they would stab or scrape anyone who dared come near. Worse, the thorns were covered with deadly poisonous spiders, and the whole place had a toxic and sinister air. They stood, paralyzed, unable and unwilling to figure out what to do next, while the black box in Carlos's hands kept beeping incessantly. If it was indeed communicating with the dragon's eye, it was clear that the scepter was somewhere behind the thorny gates. Mal scrunched up her face, frustrated. It was Jay who broke the silence.